When we moved from Aruba to Sweden, we weren't really sure what to do with our home in Aruba. We didn't want to sell the space that had so many memories and offered us a place to stay when we returned to the island. But what else could we do after moving internationally? That's when my husband came up with a brilliant plan. We can become hosts on Airbnb. Since starting this, I can officially say my husband had the best idea ever. The process of getting our property on Airbnb was so easy. We were able to ask other hosts for tips and got a lot of great feedback. And actually, we still get tons of good feedback and we're constantly improving our space. And Airbnb is really flexible. You just choose the dates you want to host. So if you don't have a full-time rental property like us, that's perfect too. Hosting on Airbnb is great for anyone who frequently travels or has the extra space or has a seasonal house or even someone who always goes away at the same time of year for family traditions or work events. We all know the cost of living is excessive right now, so you can get more out of your space when you host on Airbnb. The added income has been so important for my family and has given my husband a project to manage that he genuinely enjoys. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Hi, and welcome to From the Heart Conversations with Yoga Girl. This week's episode is special in a very deep way. I am joined by my dear friend Amelia Barnes, who shares a story that I know will connect to the heart of every person who listens to it. To honor Amelia and the sensitivity of this story, we will not be pausing for commercials in this week's episode. You may want to keep a box of tissues nearby. I would love to thank our sponsors who are supporting this uninterrupted interview today: TransferWise, ZipRecruiter, NatureBox, and Parachute. TransferWise helps you send money around the world. If you've ever tried to send money internationally, you know just how expensive and time-consuming it can be, as well as how steep the exchange rates are from your bank or your provider. Here's why I will be using TransferWise for my next international money transfer. Unlike other providers, TransferWise is a completely transparent way to send money internationally. You know exactly what you'll pay upfront, and you get the real exchange rate with no markup. The exchange rate with TransferWise is really good, so your money goes much further. And setting up a payment is simple and fast, and you only pay one small upfront fee. Founded by two friends from Estonia who were tired of feeling ripped off whenever they sent money home, they came up with a much quicker, cheaper, and easier way to transfer money between countries. Realizing plenty of other people were also feeling the same way about international transfers, they turned the idea into a company. They created a smart new system that gets rid of all the expensive traditional charges that you normally pay. Today, TransferWise lets millions of people and businesses all over the world send money internationally. See just how much you could save at TransferWise.com. You can also download the app for Android or iOS. Once again, that's TransferWise.com. Transfer as in, I need to transfer money to another country, and wise as in, I'm going to do that in a wise way. TransferWise.com. If you manage or own a company, or if you're hiring, ZipRecruiter is a must-know. Posting your job in one or two places is no longer enough to find quality people for the job you're looking for. As a business owner, I know just how difficult it is to search for that perfect hire. You need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now, with ZipRecruiter, you can. ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter does not depend on candidates finding you, but it finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. Just post once and watch all of your people come to you. Time is precious, and it can feel especially fleeting for a business owner. Juggling resumes and interviews can take up a whole day. Instead, just quickly screen and organize your candidates on the easy-to-use dashboard and hire that perfect person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter is used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified candidate with immediate results. The employee you've been dreaming of is waiting for you. Give it a try. Right now, you can post your jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/yoga. That's ZipRecruiter.com/yoga. One more time, try it for free today. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/yoga. Hi, and welcome to another episode of From the Heart Conversations with Yoga Girl. Today, I have a beautiful guest joining me here on the show, Amelia Barnes. Amelia is a yoga teacher, artist, designer, small business owner, and author of the book Landon's Legacy, The Power of a Brief Life. Amelia and I connected through some fairly difficult but serendipitous circumstances some years ago, and I'm so happy to have her here visiting us here in Aruba. Welcome to the show, Amelia.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
How do you feel being here?
Super excited.
Your smile is so big right
probably
now.
Probably an equal amount of little nervousness as well.
Yes, that's good, actually. Yeah. I'm so happy to have you on the show. You've been a super requested guest. So for people listening, if you don't know Amelia yet, Amelia, she's one of our guides on 108.com. She teaches amazing classes on there. And then you're here filming this week, and I had so many people write me, like, worried, like, is Amelia going to be on the podcast? Promise she'll be on the podcast. Hello, we didn't hear about the podcast. Like, people are
no way
really excited to listen to this episode.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yes. Yeah. So we're very, very
so excited
happy to have
to
you.
Here.
Oh, good. Yeah. So we haven't seen each other since, what, 2 years?
Two and a half years. Yeah.
In Thailand.
What?
How did that time pass so fast?
Yeah. Even... Babies.
Babies. Do that. It's like you enter a time warp of madness. But I haven't seen you in so long. So so we first connected through social media, which is magical and amazing. And this was, I think, 2014. When did we?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was following you from the very beginning, since I got Instagram. That would have been 2013.
Wow.
And then we connected. Yeah, it would have been like right around 2014. Yeah.
Somewhere around there. So I was running this. I know we have a ton of listeners that participated in this challenge. I was running a challenge called the Yoga Girl Challenge. People ask for like a rerun of that challenge all the time. I just haven't had the time to do it. I really want to do it once more. It was so amazing. But it was an Instagram challenge called the Yoga Girl Challenge, where every day for 21 days, you committed to practicing yoga, to meditating, and also to follow a theme of the day. So there was everything from, there was a day of forgiveness, there was a day of creativity, there was a day of cleaning out, a day of gratitude. And so many people joined in, and you were one of them.
Yes, it was really serendipitous. I, at the time, just opened my Instagram, and it was a moment, I think, where I was at a really, really low place. And the very first thing that popped up was this, like, the all of the different...
The themes
in this post, right? And I was looking through it, and I don't even think I saw that it was you posting it, but I was like, this is really cool. And then I was like, oh, it's a challenge. And then it just, I'd never really done a challenge like that before, and it sparked my interest right away, and I knew, like, I needed it. And so here we are today.
It was so wonderful to see so many people really dedicate, because it was, I wanted to do a challenge that wasn't just about yoga or poses and things like that, but to really make a change in your life. And it was wonderful. But I was going through a really shitty time at the time. My best friend Andrea had just passed away a couple months earlier. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I think doing this challenge was a way for me to kind of bring my mind to something else and to stay focused and to, you know, to do something than just not just sit home and wallow. And then I started having all these people tag me in posts or tag you in my posts saying like, oh my God, Amelia K. Barnes, follow her. She has an amazing journey watching you two together go through this. And I was so intrigued. I said, okay, who is this? And I remember this really clearly. I clicked on your profile. I hadn't seen it or connected with you in any way before. Mm-hmm. And you had just gone through, I think, the biggest heartbreak a human being can go through.
Yeah.
I think. Do you want to share a little bit?
Yeah, I would love to. It's a joy to be able to talk about my son, Landon. And he was born in 2014, July 8th. He lived for 4 days and passed away in my arms, on my chest. And his story, I guess, began when we conceived him, which was just a huge amount of emotions. And I think you can definitely relate to this, like a mixture of just complete and utter shock and awe and excitement and fear all mashed up in one. But as the pregnancy went along, I really embraced it, and I got more comfortable in my body and my yoga practice. And I think...
And you were sharing this on Instagram,
too. Really helped, right? Because in my personal life, I only had a few friends who were into yoga who had been pregnant. And so I didn't have a lot of people in my life that I could kind of look to for inspiration. And so online, it was really wonderful because there was so many people and wonderful, incredible, inspiring women And I was inspired to share my yoga practice while I was pregnant. And so
How was your pregnancy?
And it was good. The beginning was not the greatest. I think I was really emotional and I didn't get very nauseous. I think I only threw up maybe once or twice, which was really lucky, but I just kind of felt queasy a lot of the time. But as I got into my second trimester, and I think after that point, it just kind of kept getting better right up to the end. And I had a lot of energy. I just really felt like I was lit up from the inside, which is really cool.
What a beautiful way to put it. Yeah.
It was like Landon gave me this life that was more than my own, you know, which was true. He was growing inside of me. And
your practice was because I've seen those photos from your pregnancy. Yeah. Me. I had a
pretty solid, strong practice going into that pregnancy, which was a blessing, and that I think it helped a lot with just, you know, all the pregnancy aches and pains and all the rest of it. And I think that was when I got pregnant. I had this fear that I wouldn't practice or be able to practice, and I was disappointed that I would fall back, and all my progress that I had, you know, worked so hard to achieve would be gone. And then as my pregnancy went on, I really embraced just the way that his participation in my practice actually really enhanced everything. It taught me a lot of patience and humility, and it taught me a lot about yoga, just in the sense of being a practice of healing, and it definitely moved me away from a practice that was perhaps more based on performing and, you know, achieving and getting into that next fancy arm balance or trying to, you know, master my handstand press and that sort of thing. And that suddenly didn't become quite as important. It was my practice, I think, became a little softer.
More purposeful.
And I still, like, thinking back, I still was, like, I mean, I was doing arm balances, I think, up till 40 weeks. So
amazing.
So perhaps, I mean, my practice still was quite strong.
Still really strong.
And then so I had a textbook, you know, perfect pregnancy. It was one of those pregnancies where I'd go into the doctors and they'd all just be like, oh, like, you know, you're so healthy, and, you know.
Because you eat healthy, yeah, and you're a healthy person.
Yeah, exactly, and people kind of...
Were you working then? Were you teaching? Were you?
Yeah, I taught a lot. Like, those were the days when I just... I was just starting. I think I had started my business for maybe a year, and I was kind of doing that on the side as like a hobby job, and
like
then
my clothing line,
and then the yoga teaching was like my job. So I did teach, I want to say it was up till almost 40 weeks.
Wow.
Or like 39 maybe.
It was my dream to do that. And in the end, we changed all my vinyasa classes to meditation classes. So I just sat on a big cushion and didn't move.
I think I taught a lot of yin and meditation near the end for sure. And then of course, like the more advanced classes, I often just walked around and adjusted people because they were students, like, you know, I didn't really have to demonstrate for. So
So all the way until the end, everything was beautiful.
Or so I thought. You know, around 37 weeks, I started getting itchy. And I...
In your body?
In my body. And you know, it's one of those things where you say, oh, you know, I'm itchy. I goes, ah, yeah, that was me too. And then you brush it off because, you know, were you itchy during pregnancy?
No, but I've heard of
it.
You've heard of it.
Okay, so there's a lot of reasons you could be itchy during pregnancy. And most of the time it's not an issue, but it can be. And so, I mean, it was this situation where I have a really hard time complaining about anything. And I have a really hard time expressing discomfort, or like even I feel like I have a fairly high discomfort threshold or pain threshold. So I often brush things off. And so I did brush it off for maybe a week or so. Then I mentioned it. I was having a weekly doctor's appointment near then there, of course. And And then I mentioned it, and it was kind of like, okay, are you itchy all over? And I was like, yeah, it's like all over. And then like, then they brush it off, and they're like, okay, that's fine, that's common. And then it wasn't until my last doctor's appointment that I was like, you know, the itchiness is really intense on my hands and my feet. And that's when it was like, oh, like, I saw like a bit of concern in the doctor's eyes, and he was like, well, let's test, you know, let's do some testing. And so I had some blood drawn, and then never heard back. So a few days later, went into labor.
Never heard back.
Never heard back. No. And that's one of the things I don't like to talk about it a lot, because I hate to suggest that I blame anybody, because I don't. I really don't. I don't. I think everybody did the best that they could have done. And, you know, the way things happen in the medical world is sometimes tests don't always get back to the right person at the right time, or they get slipped under. You know, anything can happen. So I don't. I don't hold. I don't hold that in my heart anymore.
No, you don't have to get stuck.
Yeah,
on that.
I don't get stuck on that anymore. And so.
Want to know one of my favorite sounds? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language, I guarantee it'll be one of your new favorite sounds too. Be a better you with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching, so you're ready to practice what you have learned in the real world. I absolutely love using Babbel. Their convenient courses have helped both me and my husband learn real-life conversation skills in a different language. He's learning Swedish, of course, and I've been trying my hand at French again. It is so easy to learn how to order food, how to ask for directions, speak to merchants, and all without having to consult language apps while on vacation, or in my husband's case, living here in Sweden with me. Studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others continue to prove Babbel is better. One study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. Babbel has over 16 million subscriptions sold. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off of your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, at babbel.com/yoga. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/yoga, spelled babbel.com/yoga. Rules and restrictions may apply. So just a few days later.
Yeah, a few days later, I want to say it was like 4 or 5 days later, Friday, yeah, it would have been 4 or 5 days later, I went into labor, and
how was that? Was it like the water broke? Was it
no,
what you had imagined, or was it?
Oh, goodness. It was funny because I was 41 weeks, and I had gotten to the point where I was like, hey, I'm just going to stop thinking that I'm pregnant, because clearly thinking about this is not helping, because I was so, like, you know, you get to the 40 weeks, you were there, and you're just like, just what's, like, is this going to happen? And then you're just constantly thinking you're going into labor. So I was like, hey, I'm not going to think about it. I'm just going to live my life. The baby's going to come out, right? And so the day before, we had had our fetal assessment, which you have at 41 weeks or around there to make sure baby is good, and, you know, check to make sure there's enough fluid and all the rest of it. And things were perfect. I was happy. They sent me away happy. And I think that testing also gave me this reassurance too, because I asked, you know, like, oh, you know, they were worried about this. Do you think like it's a problem? She's like, oh no. Like, you know, she kind of gave me this reassurance that if there was any problems, we would have noticed, you know, or that was the what I got from the technician doing the ultrasound. So I had this sense of, oh, okay, you know, things are good. I'm like, good. They didn't call me. Good news. Baby's coming. This is great. So I was feeling really positive and went home. Next morning, woke up. I took my dog Cody for a walk like I do every morning. And I felt like a shift on that walk. I was like, I had this feeling that things were happening. And I'd have been having like the Braxton Hicks, or those practice contractions. And so it kind of felt like that, but maybe a little bit more. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go to a yoga class. Like, so I took off, drove to the studio, and I had a few things to drop off from a business as well. And it just so turned out that the yoga class was actually full, so I couldn't get in. So I was like, okay, this is a sign. Clearly it's not meant to be. So I turned around and started driving home. And as I was driving home, it like really picked up. I was like, okay,
this is not labor. A practice. Yeah. This is real.
This is labor. And then I had gone home around 11 or just before noon. And my labor went like from 0 to 100 in no time at all. It was so bizarre. And so I had this like printout on our fridge that was like all the stages, you know, we had been to hypnobirth class and we had a doula and we were just like, you know, all, yeah, I felt very prepared anyways. And
it's so funny how you think you can prepare and then you realize like there's no preparing.
No preparing for this, no. But I had this little chart. I'm like, okay, what stage am I at? And I'm like trying to time these contractions. And my contractions were all like back to back, back to back. And so I'm like, this is transition, what? I'm like, I just started going into labor. And so I had this idea in my mind that I was going to have the baby like now. I had this intuition that we should really go to the hospital. And that was not really the plan because I had wanted really badly to have a lot of the labor at home. I think had I been able to get a midwife, I most likely would have wanted to have the birth at home. And so kind of strange for me to be like calling my husband, my mom, my doula, being like, oh, we got to get to the hospital now. But we did, and it was good because my contractions were just like insane, back to back, constant, no break.
So how dilated were you when you got there?
Not very much.
No.
it was like 3 or 4. Mm. Like not much at all. And I was like, are you kidding me?
I thought I was ready.
I also know because my mom had a really fast labor, so I had that in the back of my head that maybe that would be the case for me. Because she had like labors where they like almost came out in the car kind of like 2 hour type things. So yeah, I got to the hospital and got into triage and they put the heart rate monitor on and of course his heart rate was there. And it was this bizarre thing because looking back, I remember feeling this like relief or this really deep sense of almost a mixture of relief and fear because it was in that moment that I realized that there was an alternative to that. Like in my entire pregnancy, even in like the early phase of like, you know, where you could have a miscarriage more likely, I didn't really even let my mind go there. It was like, I don't know what it was. I think if I went there, it was just too scary of a place to be. So it was in that moment in the hospital and for whatever reason that I allowed that thought in that there could be an alternative that like and I actually never knew anybody who had lost a baby like other than a miscarriage who had lost like a full-term baby. So I think it wasn't on my radar partially because I actually didn't know what happened I know that the infant mortality rate is still quite high in a lot of places in the world, but I live in Canada. You don't hear about it. You don't think about it. It's not something.
And it's also not something I don't think doctors and midwives and practitioners like to talk about it. You don't want to instill this fear and, you know.
And nobody likes to. And it's interesting because even as somebody who has lost a child, I still don't bring it up. Like I teach prenatal classes once a week. I don't talk about it ever. And it's hard because you don't want to be that person putting negative or we don't want to instill fear in anybody because.
It is a reality.
It is a reality. So it's just this tightrope you're walking between expressing your feelings and maybe educating and then also being sensitive and
it's extremely challenging. I had that with when I was 41 plus 2 or 3 or something and we went for the fetal assessment where they do the ultrasound and they had promised me that if the amniotic fluid is good and the umbilical cord is good and the heartbeat is strong, then you have until week 42 to still labor at home. And then we went there and everything was great and still this the gynecologist, she's like, no, I'm going to schedule you to get this started, to induce you tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. And I said, but why? There was no, there was no reason that she would, you know, you told me that if everything was okay, I would have it until week 42. And she looked me in the eye and she said, are you going to debate your unborn child's life with a doctor? For every day that you don't have this baby, the risk is higher of having a stillborn child. Are you going to debate this with me? And I looked her in the eye and I could have killed her. Like, mm-hmm. I was furious. I cried the whole way home in the car. I was so angry. Like, how could she bring this up? Is she out of her mind? Like, I was so furious. Mm-hmm. But it happens. It's not like now that I'm sane and not pregnant anymore. Of course, you're so hormonal and emotional. Of course, like there's a reason that this medical experienced person is telling me this. You know, there's a reason that she is encouraging me to have the baby early. Maybe there's too much of that encouragement sometimes in the medical world. Like, who knows where the balance is? But in that moment in time, like, I didn't want my mind there.
Exactly. And yeah, it is such a challenge. And I was in the same place as you. Like, I would have gone to 42 weeks, and it's the same way. I mean, I guess it depends on your doctor, but a lot of women that I know, they don't get induced till 42 or after. That's just kind of the way our medical system works. Like, you're not priority enough. Sometimes I've had some friends that go and they're begging. They're like, please. They're like, nope. There's more important women in there.
You know, in France, they don't consider you full term until 42.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's not even.
I think average first time mother would be 41 in one day or something is the average or something. So I was pretty average. Like, actually,
Landon but then when
was
you
born
got
at 41 in
one
day.
When you came to the hospital and then. Yeah. They checked the heart and everything was fine.
Everything was fine.
Then you felt relief.
But I felt relief, and honestly, I don't know if I really felt fear in that moment that was conscious. But when I look back, I remember like a pit in my stomach. And I wonder what that was. Like, maybe something intuitive. I don't really know what that was. But my labor, like in the hospital, I think I arrived around 1. And so Landon wasn't born until maybe 9 or 9-ish in the evening. So I was in the hospital laboring for about 8 or 9 hours. And again, like, no one, like, I mean, I was a very normal, healthy pregnancy. I wasn't high risk. So I wasn't I had a nurse, lots of nurses, you know, they check in on you. I wasn't monitored the whole time. It was just like, okay, let's check for baby's heart rate, blah, 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 off and on. And then I was in the shower a lot, and I didn't have an epidural, so there was, and because my contractions were back and back to back, it was pretty much essential. Like, whenever I came out of the shower, I was like, oh, okay, I'm back in there. It was the only thing that brought me relief. And so somewhere, I guess around that time in the evening, 8 or 9 o'clock, and I was so deep into labor that I had no awareness of time, but I do have this picture in my mind of the clock across from the bed that was somewhere around 8 o'clock when I heard the nurse say, oh, like, his heart rate is, something's happening with his heart rate. I can't even remember the words. And then it was like.
And was that from just a check?
Yeah, they were checking my belly with the heart rate monitor thing.
So could it have been low for a while and they just found out, or they didn't know?
It could have. And because I had been in the shower for a little bit before that, and they would check me while I was in the shower as well. So it was kind of, but I, to be honest, because I had no perception of time in that, I don't really know how much time had passed between like the last time and then that time. And so his heart rate was dropping, and it was almost immediate that they put the little clip in his head. So they kind of, I just felt something going up there and clip. And again, it didn't really feel like anything. I just kind of, it was such a blur. Like, it was like I wasn't even really there. And you would have been, I remember listening to your birth podcast and like that place where you really just have no fucking clue what's happening.
I mean, all that's there is just this, like, living through the moment.
And after 8 hours of like the most intense back-to-back contractions, I was really like in a weird place. So, and all I really remember about that time was being kind of thrown onto one of those wheelie things and
from
rushed
the shower.
I was on the bed at that time because they had checked me, clipped his head, found that his heart rate was obviously in a bad situation, bad enough to warrant a emergency C-section. And so they kind of threw me onto the bed and were running me through the hallways. And
it was Justin there?
Yeah, I think so. I don't remember him because I guess he was there, but like not in my sight. But I do remember nurses, and I remember one just being like, she was like glowing with light. And I remember it was in this weird mind where I was like, everything was just so beautiful, and I was just in this dreamy state at this point, and I felt like people describe before they die. It's like, it was so bizarre, but I was so at peace. I was so filled with joy. I was just filled with excitement and joy. I had never been as happy as that moment because I knew he was going to arrive. Like, I was like, yes, like I did not care anymore. Like, it's funny because going into that, my biggest fear was a C-section. And then at that moment, though, I was like, bring it on. He's coming. That's all I cared about. And so I was really happy that I knew that when I wake up, he'd be here and everything would be good. And I actually had a friend or a woman that I follow on social media, Empowered Birth Project, actually. I had just started following her. And she was really new on Instagram. And so I had kind of gave her a little shout out, and we kind of been chatting, and I was really inspired by her and vice versa. So she had just had a C-section. And so that gave me a little bit of perspective. And I felt like, this is okay.
Like if you need one.
It's not I had this idea in my head that, like, you know, I had to do it the natural way or my baby wasn't going to be like happy or something. It was just messed up. So I woke up from the C-section, and like I was under general anesthetic, so I wasn't aware of anything happening. I just kind of, my last memory was breathing into the mask and being like, just thinking in my mind, like, take bigger breaths. The faster you can get this in, the faster you're going to fall asleep, because all I want to do is speed up so they could get him out. And then I woke up, and it was like, a different person. Like, there was a complete shift in energy. And in that moment, I knew he was gone. And it was just the scariest and it's hardest feeling to explain, because I think unless you felt it, I don't think you can describe it or know it. But basically, it's just emptiness, maybe, because I knew, like, he wasn't in me anymore, and then he wasn't there in the room. And I knew that was bad, because usually if you have a C-section, like, you know, they're, you know, he wasn't premature or anything, so usually he would be with you. And I just remember this feeling that he was gone and that it was bad. And I remember saying, like, where's Landon? And I kept asking. And I don't know where my husband was. I think he was with Landon. But my mom was there. And she was, I think the first words she said were, well, he's alive. And, you know, you would think that would be really good thing to hear, but it wasn't, because I knew that it wasn't going to be for long, and I could tell by the tone in her voice too that it wasn't going to be for long, or that it wasn't good. And so, yeah, it was really horrible. And
was anybody else with you then, or was
it? There was lots of people, but I don't remember it. I remember being on that operating table for a while, though, because eventually they brought him, and I was still in that operating room. As far as I know, unless the recovery room looked like an operating room, I don't know, but it was just a lot of metal and cold and fluorescent light, and they wheeled him in. And I wonder how long this was, because I was, you know, when you come out of anesthetic, you're not really sure about time. So eventually he came a few hours later, maybe 2 hours or an hour and a half maybe, and he was in the incubator, and he was hooked up to everything, like wires coming out of everything, and it was horrible to see him like that. But it was also the first time I got to see his face, so it was just this, like, if you can imagine, like, most joyful moment in your life where you get to see your baby's face for the first time, but then the most horrible moment in your life where you know your baby's going to die, and then they're combined together in one. So it's like...
Could you hold him?
I couldn't. Hold him. There was all these wires out of everything, and he was in an incubator. I think I could reach and touch him. I think I touched him. And the first thing I noticed was that he looked exactly like me. It was just crazy. I was looking like looking at a baby who was me. And so that even was even more of like a, I mean, it was so intense. And I saw him. And all I wanted to do was to be able to hold him. I couldn't hold him. And that was horrible. Because I knew he was so alone in there. And I didn't know if he was feeling anything or not. I didn't know if he was scared. I didn't know, he had no, he wasn't moving. He didn't open his eyes.
Did you get any answers at that point, or was it
nothing,
just...
Nothing. Everyone was just shocked.
No one
had any idea what happened or why that happened. Nobody. It was just like, what the hell? And I was just dumbfounded. I was like, this, like, I've owned my life because I had not known anything like this stuff happened to anyone I knew or heard about it ever. I literally thought, like, I was the only person this happened to. I was like, what did I do? Like, I was, like, how could this have gone so wrong? Like, and so we were told by the doctors that it didn't look good, but that there's always chances, like, they can never say anything 100%. So we agreed to keep him on the life support and do... The 3-day, what they do is they put him on a cooling pad and they cool his body temperature for 3 days. And they hope that it reduces the brain from swelling and maybe helps reverse or repair brain damage. The brain damage that would have occurred because he wasn't like his heart would have stopped beating. Like, I mean, the C-section itself probably took somewhere around 7 minutes, but they weren't able to resuscitate him for about 15 minutes. And that's a very long time to be without a heartbeat and breath. And some babies have, like, they will recover from that and they actually go on and live good lives. And it happens. It can be, I actually have met babies that have survived that. But he wasn't that. He had so much brain damage that they didn't think he would even be able to take a breath on his own. And as the 3 days passed, his organs started to shut down and, like, they just kept pumping him full of all kinds of medications. And it was, and I honestly didn't think I could hold out any longer watching it because nothing was helping. Like, there was no, it wasn't getting better. And he had no reflexes and he could not open his eyes. And I just wanted, like, it to stop, like, the pain and whatever. I don't know if he felt pain, but I didn't want him to be apart from me any longer because I couldn't hold him. And so we did decide that we would take him off life support on that 3rd day if we didn't see any improvement on the MRI. And when they did the MRI, there was no improvement and it was bad. There was, like, his whole brain was completely damaged. So it was... that Friday evening that we decided to remove life support and yeah, so it's we didn't know how long we would have with him. And I think that was challenging. They like they just said, like, just, what we'll do. They kind of explained it. Like, we'll put him, like, they have this like pump thing. It's like a hand pump that they can ventilate his lungs or help him breathe or with, I guess, when he's extubated, so he's taken off the breathing machine, and say that we'll use that for him until you get to your room, so that at least he doesn't die on the way to your room, basically. And so they're like, and then we'll remove that, and then, like, we'll just have to see what happens.
We just wait.
And so we got to take him to our room, and we had a really nice room there. They have a special room for, I guess, parents who have to say goodbye. And so we removed his breathing, his tubes, all of his breathing stuff. And then he kept breathing, which was really wonderful and beautiful. And I think that was his, I made a big difference for me, because I had that time with him where he was still alive in a sense. Like, he wasn't at all present, in the terms of like being able to open his eyes or do anything, but he was breathing, and his, you know, his skin was a nice color, and he looked just like a sleeping baby. And I mean, we could kind of imagine that he was. And so we spent that whole night, like, he just kept breathing and breathing and breathing, and we just kind of,
I've seen these photos of you with him, and it's, you just look like you just had a baby, and
I know
it's your day, first day at the hospital, and that's it.
That was an incredible gift, because we have photos, and I know a lot of the time, I mean, it's not something you would think of doing when you're losing a child. It's just not, your brain isn't working that way. So the fact that, I think it was we had a social worker that works with the people who are in the NICU, and she had suggested photos, and because I was on Instagram at the time and I had shared my entire pregnancy, I knew that I wanted to have photos to share with the world. I mean, I think I would have wanted photos no matter what, but I think knowing that, because I had this platform that was based on visual media, I felt like an extra need for photos, and I didn't know at the time if I was actually even going to share any of them. It wasn't really actually at that moment. I almost felt like I wanted just to delete my whole Instagram account and never venture online into a public space, online or in real life, ever again. So I don't know if that was it, but I did have this intuition that I would want photos, and I do. I mean, I wish I had more, you know, when that's all the photos you'll ever get of your child in their entire life, all of a sudden 100 photos is not enough. Mm. And so we took photos, and...
What was it like holding him?
Oh, gosh. I think at first, just really sad, really, really sad. And because I had spent 3 days already in the hospital, in so much fucking pain, like, that was the world's worst C-section. I mean, I'm sure other C-sections are bad, but it was brutal. I think when the quicker they do a C-section, and the more, like, they really, literally just rip me open. When they do it in planned circumstances, it's a lot gentler, as I found out having my daughter through a planned C-section. But yeah, it was brutal. Like, I could barely stand at all. I was in constant, like, I would just, every so often, it felt like somebody took a knife and stabbed me as hard as they could, and that pain would last for a minute or two, and then to the side. But I don't exactly know where it was. I think it was because they did like some stitching deep within me that it would sometimes get kind of twisted around, or something was going on in there. But it was the most brutal pain. Like, at one point, I thought I was going to die, and I had to phone, because I was in the room alone for some reason, and I had to phone like my husband and be like, tell people I have to go back to the whatever and get checked out, because I think I ripped open. Like, that's what it felt like. So it was brutal. So the physical pain was, and manage physical pain, I think that almost detracted from my ability to feel emotional pain to its fullest extent. And
you're probably numb.
Numb in a way. Yeah. And I remember like talking to my husband about this afterwards, and it scared him a lot, because I wasn't crying. Like, for the first, maybe I cried at night, but like during the day, I was just like stone, like I had no emotions, and it terrified him. He's like, he thought I would never come back. and I guess he was more emotional than I was at the hospital, I think. So yeah, at that point, because I hadn't really slept much. And so that point, it was just, it was hard to feel anything. And by the next morning,
he kept breathing.
He kept breathing all night, and the next morning he was still going. So they said that
he needed a hand pump to get to the room, but the whole night he stayed.
He still stayed, and it was... I have mixed feelings about that, because, I think it had to be that way, and it was meant to be that way. But then there's always a part of me that was like, was he suffering? Was he, you know? And it's hard to watch your baby die, obviously. But like when you, what happens when, and I didn't know about this. I never watched anyone die before. So what happens is that they'll stop breathing. And so he stopped breathing a lot. And then he would turn blue and he would look like he had died. But then something triggers his brain, like the lowest point of his brain, like that, that triggers the breathing. And then something would trigger that because he was without oxygen for so long. And he would just start breathing again.
Oh my God.
And then it would go back into that cycle. And so that happened many, many times. And so every time we thought we had lost him. And so we had to keep going through that over and over again. And so by the time it was like one, maybe noon or so. And my sister, like my family, by that time, a lot of her family had visited and they had a chance to see him on Holden, which was really beautiful because I didn't think that would happen because we thought he would die right away.
They got to meet him.
They got to meet him. And some had met him in the NICU, others hadn't. So that was really wonderful. And my sister is a nurse and she works in the NICU, and it was actually really serendipitous because that was her very first week. She was a student, actually. And that was her first week after her residency. So she was actually working at NICU. And so she took the week off because of what was happening, but she was there with me. And or no, she didn't take the week. No, I don't remember. No. She would work, and then she would come and because she was at a different hospital at the time, and then she would come and visit. Okay. And she basically spent like every waking moment with me, which was that she could with me, and that was really, really a blessing because she knew a lot about what was happening, and she could explain to me why he stopped breathing and that kind of thing. And then when he was breathing, it was very hard for him to breathe. So he was like wheezing. So it was like, and that kind of breathing. So it wasn't like a peaceful breath at all.
Just hearing you talk about this, is this like a, it's not a human situation. Like it's an unimaginable place.
The most bizarre thing is that when you're in that situation, it actually... it's not as horrible. Like it's beautiful at the same time. It was because you're with your child for the first time. So, and they're dying, but they're also living. So you can either experience that time as if they're dying or as if they're living, you know? And so I eventually maybe realized that and decided that, you know, if this was the only time we were going to have with him, we might as well make the most of it. So, you know, I remember at one point we were even joking around, like, oh, you know, he's being like a little joker like his daddy. And like, you know, Dustin loves to play pranks on me all the time and goof around. So, you know, that was our little boy. And my sister, she had actually suggested a few times that, you know, you should really do skin-to-skin contact with him because that's what they recommend for any baby that's in the NICU who's struggling, because skin-to-skin contact is the best way to help a baby because they're next to you in the womb, and to be next to you once they're outside of the womb is very healing. And there's, you know, countless scientific studies that have shown babies to develop better and grow better.
I know
better.
They do that in Sweden, where I'm from. Mm-hmm. I have a cousin had a baby at 26 or 27 weeks, really early, and they don't use incubators anymore. Mm-hmm. So they put you in a sterile room, and for 24 hours a day, you're skin to skin.
That's amazing.
They call it the kangaroo
everywhere.
Method. So 12, she would do 12 hours, and then her husband 12 hours, and they would alternate for
that's incredible.
3 months.
Actually, my sister is telling me about that. It's not like that where we are, but I think they are with like the more than likely move but towards it that. Sense. It's a more progressive, I think.
Being out of the womb, that's the deepest connection you can make. Yeah.
Yeah. So they do is like the moms I've known who've been in the NICU do a lot of skin to skin. And
how did you feel? What did you feel?
Well, I didn't want to do it in the beginning because I guess I was like, well, he's not getting better. Like, he's not, like, why? Like, he's dying. Like, and I guess it was a fear too that I was going to hurt him or make him more uncomfortable because he had, when they remove all the tubing, they just kind of cut off all the wires and then, like, put these clamps on the, so he had like his whole belly was just like a mess of wires still. So he had all that. And I didn't want to see that. I didn't want to like, so I have him in a blanket. And because it didn't look very good and I didn't want to see that. And so, but then, and also like, I couldn't really hold him very easily because of how much pain I was in with the C-section. So to have him on me, I didn't really know how to get him positioned right because I didn't want him to be on my belly at all. And so then she was like, oh, no, just lie down. And so I managed to lie down a little bit on a pillow. And then she had just kind of unswaddled him and plopped him there. And it was completely, I don't know the right word for it, but as soon as he landed on my chest, he relaxed. And it was a very tangible sense of letting go. And I felt that through my skin. And it was in that very moment that he took his last breath. And it was just like this, a sigh, like, and then he was gone. And I kind of kept expecting him to keep struggling, but he didn't struggle. Like, he didn't fight anymore. Because before that, he would tense up like this, and he would get, his shoulders would kind of like go up, and he'd get really tense. And his fists would make fists. And then as soon as he was on me, he didn't. You can see, like, he just completely melted. And so that was just, like, yeah, that was incredible to feel that. And it, the realization hit me that, you know, he probably was holding on that long because I don't know if it was he was fearful to let go or he was confused. You know, I've heard some people speak of, like, when you die and your soul or your spirit or whatever is going to depart the body, when you're in that state of, like, not dead but kind of almost, the spirit is kind of there but not in the body but around the body and then kind of waits for the right moment to leave. He was
waiting for you.
Yeah, yeah. And so I was very... I didn't know if he was there, like if it was just this empty shell or if he was actually there, like, because I didn't know how I felt about that. And I also wondered if he had actually died inside of me and that they resuscitated him, but it was just artificial. Like, they had just, like, it was just machines and that his soul wasn't there. So I don't know, like, but in that moment, I knew that he was there.
He was there. Yeah.
And that was an incredible gift because, you know, I can look back at the photos and actually believe that that was him. And I don't, like, I know so many moms who have stillborn babies. And I think that, like, you can, and I think had that been my situation, I would have found another way to feel that. Some peace around that. But for me, in my situation, it gave me a lot of comfort to know that there was something, there was some, not maybe consciousness isn't the right word, but there was an awareness there of
you
some
met
kind.
Him. I mean,
and that he maybe knew I was there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He wasn't alone.
Yeah. And I also have a feeling too, like, because he had spent his whole life inside my womb, that when he was outside and not with me, he was really confused. And then when he came into contact with me, he felt like he was back in my womb, and that was what he needed to transition. So that's another thing that...
The coming back
home. Kleenex.
Let's take a Kleenex break.
Kleenex break. I'm going to be snorting all over the place.
Oh, God.
My goodness.
I'm glad I put the Kleenex box here. I mean, I was... I was crying before you came here, just knowing we were going to talk about this because this is so, I mean, everyone can relate to your story in some shape or form, you know, the fear of death or having, you know, losing a loved one, whether it's a parent or a friend, like in my case. And now since having become a mom, like this is, it's not imaginable. I can't put the... I can't really put the thought in my mind.
And I relate because I am a mom now to a living baby, Lily.
Yeah, let's talk about Lily.
And I also can't, even though I have lived it.
That's so odd.
And I don't know if it's a coping mechanism. I don't know what it is, but like I can't not imagine losing her. For a moment, I can't. It's not. Yeah.
How long? How long after Landon passed did you get pregnant with Lily?
8 months, about. And it was right after your retreat. Literally. Yes. Came home and bam.
Because what day did Landon? He passed away.
Well, it would have been July 12th. And I got home from your retreat on March 8th.
So after he passed, that's, I don't know how much time passed before I started that Instagram challenge and then people started.
It was August? Yeah. So it ended in the beginning of September. Yeah. Or maybe it was late July, but sometime around then, yeah.
Okay, so maybe a couple of weeks
after. It wasn't long at all. But I was writing a lot about my experience by then.
And that's so, the fact that you chose to do that, I think is so, because you can choose to shut down and to hide away and that feeling of, okay, I want to close my Instagram account. I want to close my life and never meet anybody ever again, never talk about this ever. Mm-hmm. But actually stepping out, I found for me when I was going through the grief of losing my best friend, I had that too. I said, okay, I'm on Instagram. I post every day fucking handstands and beach pictures. Like it's bullshit. I'm never coming back. I'm never talking to anyone ever again. Mm-hmm. But then I didn't. And I shared it instead. I felt this pain and I shared about the pain. And I found that for every moment that I would write in my notes app on the iPhone and it would be middle of the night or these like moments of absolute despair. There's the darkest time. And I would write about it and I would just write what I felt and then I would share it. And it was such a huge piece of my healing. The telling the story that's so hard to tell, the sharing the pain that's so hard to carry. And then, you know, hearing people that have gone through the same thing and getting that support from people, just, it was totally life-changing.
Yeah. And I also wrote everything on my notes app in the middle of the night. And then also felt like it was almost like it was, once I could get the feelings into words and kind of sort them out into sentences and be like, okay, coherent a little bit. And then at the end, I could be like, okay, what is in this that could be, you know, can this be positive? Sometimes not, but usually I could find some gem or some silver lining in something. And that would uplift me enough to keep going with a day. Whether it was just, you know, gratitude or appreciation of the present moment or... so many little things.
Because you shared it so... Because people started tagging you in my posts and you have to read this, you have to connect with this girl. And then in the challenge it said, oh, she has to win. Amelia has to... Because the prize of the challenge was if you won. We only had one prize, one winner. And we were supposed to have one winner, one person. And everybody said, Amelia has to go to Thailand. And then I clicked and then I read your story and I remember I scrolled all the way back, like I know many, many people did. And it was just, I remember for the first time in my own grief, because for me it had been 3 or 4 or so months since my friend passed away. Seeing someone else go through the same type of pain was a big, because I didn't see any of that. I felt very alone in my grieving, kind of this output of sharing with the world, but no one was really sharing with me back in that way. And I read your story and it was just, okay, I lost a friend, you lost a baby. The magnitude of that is, I remember telling Dennis, like, you know what? There are moments when I feel there's nothing worse than this. But I said, there is, you know, perspectives here. There's other lives. People die all the time. Like this girl lost her baby, you know, and here I am complaining about my stuff. I don't know. It gave me a different sense of, you know, I'm not alone. And grief happens and death happens and loss happens and somehow people survive and you were surviving.
Somehow. It's like we don't really have a choice.
No.
I know, and sometimes it just feels like you don't want to, but then there's just little things that pull you through. And when I look back to that summer, there are actually some really beautiful things about it. It wasn't totally dark. And I think that actually sharing and writing about it helped me see those points of lightness. And actually having the prompts from your challenge really helped bring out a lot of that, because it got me thinking about things that I wasn't thinking about or was too afraid to think about. And every day, because it was interesting, because it almost seemed like the day is aligned with something in my life that was happening that day that really fit, or that really, that question or that theme was perfect. It was exactly what I needed at that moment. And that was just really interesting. And it's a feeling that I get with you a lot, because even with this podcast, every week, I've mentioned to you, like, every week is oddly exactly what I needed in that moment. Like, it's about something that's like so perfect for what I'm thinking or going through.
You know, that's how energetically connected we all are. I know. You don't know how many people say that, like, this about the podcast specifically, because I always share or happen to come across a guest or a theme that's always relating to my own stuff. Like, I knew we were going to do this podcast, and I haven't been dreading it at all. Like, I love you, I love talking to you, but I know this is a heavy one. Okay, yes. Last week I spoke to a super, like, lighthearted conversation, this super awesome, actor, singer, like, awesome, cool guy, but very lighthearted. And I know, okay, this is deep stuff. Like, we're going to cry here. We're going to blow our noses in this podcast. It's hard to talk about, but it also, for me, because I have this deep-seated fear that something is going to happen to Lea Luna. I mean, I'm sure every mother does, and it's something that you don't want that fear at the front of your mind, because you can't live. I mean, it would be like every time Dennis takes her to go for a walk, like, you know, I would panic, like, you can't. But I've had that, and my whole pregnancy, kind of the way you describe it, like, I think at the back of my head, I had this fear, because I've had a lot of loss in my life, so much death. And I remember the moment that we found out that we were pregnant, that there was this little voice that says, is it going to work out though? You know, so for those three first months of miscarriage, I wasn't thinking about the miscarriage, that it was possible, but it was at the back of my mind, but I didn't let myself feel it. And then as I got more and more pregnant, I was like, wait, I guess this is happening. I guess she's going to live. I guess I'm going to have, you know, but it wasn't until I actually had her in my arms that I looked at her like, oh my God, like, she's alive. Like, I have an alive baby. And that fear, you know, I think I'm going to live with it for the rest of my life. That's what all other moms tell me. Like, this is having your heart live outside your body for as long as you can live.
That's exactly what it is. And, you know, but there's two ways you can approach that, right? Like, I've had to let go of a lot of control in so many ways. And I think that was the one thing that actually gave me sanity through my pregnancy with Lily, was, and I wrote about it at least a few times, just this feeling like it wasn't really up to me. I hate to say everything happens for a reason, because that's like, but like, I really did get a sense that no matter what happens, I can't be so quick to decide whether it's good or bad, because
it, right?
I don't know. Like, I just don't know. I remember writing about this in my book somewhere.
I have the chapter open, I think.
Yeah.
Do you mind if I read?
Oh, I would love you to. Yeah.
Because this was my most, I mean, something that I really wanted to ask you is, okay, you lost a son, and then you get pregnant again, and how, because I live with that fear. And sometimes that fear, the fear of something happening to my baby, can be so overwhelming that I can totally lose my... I don't know if you noticed, but we took a class yesterday together, or we practiced, like, you were two people next to me at Island Yoga here. It started raining, and I left the room. Did you notice?
Yes.
I left halfway. Mm-hmm. So it started raining, and in Aruba, people don't really know how to drive in the rain. And then I was on my mat in the middle of a really nice practice, really present, feeling really good. And then this little tiny thought pops up, like, I wonder if Dennis is out driving with the baby in the rain. And then I waved it away. And then that little thought is just grows and grows and grows. And I can imagine in like, the whole scenario plays out in my head. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is, I think after having lost someone, you kind of live mm-hmm. this way. But the whole scenario up until like him coming back with an empty car seat, like open, flashed in my mind, which is not real. It is not true. God, this is so hard to talk about. But I had to leave the room. Like I had to leave the room and I run out to the front desk and I'm like, can someone please call Dennis? Like call Dennis right now. And the front desk girls are trying to call him, but the phone isn't working. They call 3 times. It doesn't work. I run back to the office. Like I get my phone and I'm panicking, you know, in the rain, calling him. And he's like, no, no, everything is fine. Like they're fine. They're chilling somewhere. Everything is okay. But that fear, like it takes me completely insane places sometimes. And I want to, yeah, I want to find a way to live with that and not mm-hmm. go insane because she needs to have a life. Like she's going to go do things and, I don't know, go find herself in the jungle somewhere when she gets older. Like life, she's yeah. going to have to go to school and, you know, like there's moments every day where I have to let go a little bit mm-hmm. of this trying to control, making sure that, because there's no way to live like that.
Well, that rain was so, like in terms of like the sound in the shala though. Yeah.
The rain was so beautiful, but I couldn't enjoy but it, I could, you know, yeah, because I get stuck in this thing. And I don't want to live with this trying to, like, mm-hmm. I know I have to let go. And after I lost my friend, I would, mm-hmm. every time anyone would leave the room, mm-hmm. I would imagine them dying. Mm-hmm. Like that was just for yeah. the longest time. So what I wanted, what I was really interested mm-hmm. or what I really wanted to talk to you about was, mm-hmm. okay, you lost the son and mm-hmm. then you get pregnant. And then how to live not in panic that something's going to happen because you actually lived through, okay, the worst. It happened to me, you know, could it happen again?
Yeah, and I don't know if there's any right answer to that. I think I've been fortunate in that before Landon, I hadn't experienced loss. So in one way, perhaps I feel like I entered the biggest tragedy in my life in a very good mental space in the sense that I felt in the back of my mind, like actually, like that maybe all these years of yoga and preparing and, you know, yoga is there. Like, I remember going to my first teacher training and this guy kind of being like, I was like 21. I was a baby. And we have a conversation. He didn't mean anything bad by it. He's like, hey, I think you're like the only one here who like doesn't have like a whole lot of shit going on in your life or like have some big drama or trauma. And I was like, yeah. And it made me kind of feel like maybe...
like you were missing
out. I was missing out. Or like, wait, like, well, when's it going to happen? Like, what's in store? And I always had this, maybe an inkling of a feeling that there would be something coming because I don't know what it was. Like, I'm an intuitive person and I just, like, there is something. And so maybe there was an inkling of feeling. I definitely never for a moment let myself, my mind go there during the pregnancy. But then I also feel that as a person, I am very trusting. And so even as desperate and sad and low as I got, I think there was always a part of me that trusted that things would maybe get better and that I would survive and that it was all part of something bigger than myself. And I remember thinking of this analogy in a sense of like when you're raising a child and they want something that you don't want them to have, whatever it is, like they want a bar of chocolate for breakfast or they want to go partying all night in like some sketchy place or whatever it is, and you say no, they might get really, really, really mad at you and angry, but when they grow up, they're going to look back and be like, everything she did was out of love. It was because she loved me. And I remember feeling one day, maybe a couple months after London died, like, what if this is actually an act of love? Like, that he wasn't taken from me, but this was a gift in itself for some reason, that even though I'm being told, no, you cannot have your baby. You can't have a living child now. Maybe there's something, maybe, I don't know. Like, how does it, maybe this no is actually an act of love, because something, when I grow up, when I get old, when I die, or after I die, or something, I'll one day understand, and I'll be able to be at peace with that. And so there was always that feeling, and I think it doesn't make things better, but here's the thing too. I also feel that you are kind of creating your reality in a lot of ways. If you are firmly believing that nothing is going to get better and your life is hell forever, you might actually fulfill that prophecy. So I think I think our thoughts have a lot of power.
A lot of power.
And I think if you allow yourself to believe, not all the time, but at least in some way, allow your mind to believe that things might be okay, because your spirit knows that things are going to be okay. That's the thing. Your spirit is never confused. It's your ego that gets in the way, right? So
hearing you even speak these words is making me kind of rest and calm. Because I think that feeling of waiting for the other shoe to drop, like it's always going to come. I mean, I had the, I don't know, extreme horrible luck or blessing or whatever, however we describe it. But I lost my best friend, and then my grandmother passed away one month later. And then our dog died.
Yeah.
And then mid, 2 days before our retreat in Thailand, so 2 days before I met you, my mom tried to commit suicide. So this was within, I don't know, the scope of a couple months, like the shoes kept dropping all around me. So I think I have that kind of instilled in me still, you know, and like there's a part of me that knows I can trust in this, relax in this love. Like she's here. She's not going to be taken from me all as well. But I was really thinking, because that's for me is the greatest part of your overcoming this, or of your, you know, living through this story, is the love that you share with Lily now, and just watching you two together, the calm, relaxed trust in your existence. Like it's the most beautiful thing.
Yeah, it is wonderful. Like, and it's a different experience for everyone. I think, you know, some moms go through loss and live with a lot of fear, surrounding their living children. And I've been really blessed and fortunate to have some tools, and also I think just being immersed in the yoga community has really helped, and having access to like your retreat. I went to Kripalu. I've just been in a really good position to heal. Not everyone gets that, and you know, it's, and that's one of the reasons actually I created the Landon's Legacy Retreat, was to try and create a space for that healing and community to take place. So I created a retreat in his honor, which is a yoga / nature / healing retreat. So it brings together women from all over who have lost.
It's dedicated for women who...
Yeah, who have lost.
So everyone who attends have lost...
Lost a baby or a child. And this year, it's a little bit broader. So a woman who are experiencing the loss of being able to carry, like infertility. Mm. And even grandma loss, like losing grandchildren and that kind of thing. So it's a little bit broader. Miscarriage is also like that kind of thing.
How many of these retreats have you?
Two so far. Like,
what was that first one?
My goodness. Because it was so, like, looking back, I'm like, wow, like, I hosted this retreat. Like, it was under a year after Landon died. So I don't even know, like, I was still going through a lot myself. Like,
in it to actually using it to help others, you know, that's a fairly intense,
quick process. And the idea came to me, like, 9 months before that. So it would have been around September, October, after Landon died, so not long after that, I got this idea that this is something that I would want to do, and I found the location. It was just perfect. And
how much do you cry in these retreats?
I mean, all day.
Well,
no, yes and no. There's a lot of laughter. A lot of laughter. Actually, it's amazed me at both retreats. Like, these are like the goofiest women. Like, I don't know if loss brings some wild sides of you out or something, or you just don't have the same inhibitions, but like, funny, or
maybe
funny.
Just you want to live.
Yeah, or you just want to live. Like, yeah. So there is not no actually, you'd back, think it would be really maybe. Depressing, but it's actually really joyful. Like, there's so much laughing, so much fun, so much play. Mm. And you wouldn't think it's a retreat for moms who have lost children.
I love
it's
that.
In that sense. But then the actual practices of yoga and that kind of deeper stuff, yeah, there's a lot of tears. Yeah, mm. The journaling and sharing.
But what
and
a
that
beautiful
kind of thing. Yeah.
thing, because yeah. now you really are a. Mm-hmm. You know, a beacon for women out there who have gone through the same thing, you know, someone to look to and for them to feel, okay, I am not alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's so important. Like, I can't even express enough. Like, you actually were, I feel like you were one, like the, probably the person I look to the most, like, especially in that time. Like, I was following you when Andrea passed away and that really hit me, like, even though I never met you before, like, it really hit me, like, it really affected me. Maybe it was almost like a like forecasting or not forecasting, I don't know what, foreshadowing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or some kind of like that something was coming for me too or something, because I really clung on to everything you were writing about and saying in that, and then that also was partly the inspiration for me to actually share about it. I honestly don't think I would have gone down that route if it hadn't been for you, really, because there was no one else I followed who ever talked about like that.
It's so important. Yeah. The more, I don't know, I feel like the older I get or the more of this type of work that I do with, like, now my yoga classes and my retreats that I lead are very, very, very different. They're not so much about the asana at all.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much focus on sharings is mm-hmm. my favorite thing to lead and to guide these days. And just the core idea of, you know, if you're going through hell, if you're going through something horrible, to not keep it to yourself, to not, you know, bury it under something and just keep it in the dark, but to actually open up and share it. It's well, first of all, it's the most powerful healing tool there is. I mean, shedding light on that darkness. It's huge. I mean, I can't remember who says it. I think maybe Paulo Coelho says it. The more times you speak your story, the lighter it becomes, the less it becomes your story.
Yeah,
you know, you kind of, yeah, you speak your story out and it becomes almost like, you know, the attachment to it doesn't become that big anymore. It's something that happened, but I don't have to shape my entire identity around this horrible thing that happened to me. You know, I can let it go a little bit. And for me, it's just that sharing, it's so important. But inspiring other people to do the same, and when we live in a society where it's not really... I don't know. It's easy to share all the amazingness and especially social media, the good part, and mm-hmm. look at how amazing my life is. And also in the yoga world, like, look at my amazing yoga practice and everything that's great about my day every day versus, okay, today is a shit day, or I lost my baby, I lost my best friend, mm-hmm. I'm going through this horrible, horrible thing. Because it's hard to be vulnerable in a public space. It's hard to be vulnerable with people that we love and know. I mean,
that scared me a lot. I'd say... I was very fearful of what people would say, because I, you know, it's online world, like, you should be able to say a lot of shit. and being in that place, it's, you can't really take it in that place, or you don't handle stuff well at all. And I never
did. You get any weird?
Oh, lots. Yeah.
Because it's baby. This is also.
And this is the one thing, like, people like, it's. There, you know, and it's, I try and always step into other people's shoes. So for somebody who has never done a yoga class, maybe they don't exercise, maybe they don't even know, maybe they've never been pregnant, you know, or no one they know has done yoga while pregnant. And they see this woman with this very advanced yoga practice being pregnant, her baby dies. Like, there is just this, like, and people would comment, well, I didn't do yoga, and my baby's alive.
Oh,
or like,
my God. Yeah.
Like, or like, you know, she killed her baby, she shouldn't have done that pose. Like, things like that. Like, and just like, or she's making this all about her. Like, look at this. She's just like making a display and like wanting attention and those kinds of comments. And like at the time they heard it, now I'm kind of like, it's, but yeah. And, and then those trolls that like just say stuff. That,
no, but I mean, of course there is so much of that. And what you said just before this, putting yourself in someone else's shoes, like the reason people write that, the reason they are reacting to this, like there's always something deeper in that. And who knows what it is. Yeah. I'm reading a book right now. Someone gifted me. It's called 7 Habits of Extremely Efficient People, something like that.
Highly
Highly effective. Yes. Thank you.
Actually, I read that.
Yeah, you did. You did. Someone just gave it to me.
Oh, cool. That's
Nice. Or I was able to read a couple of chapters. But there's a story in there about the author who he steps on the bus or the subway or something, and then a father comes in with 4 children, and the kids are crazy. Like they're going out of their minds, running up and down like the subway cart and playing on things, climbing on things, like pushing people over, like being really rowdy. And the father just sits there with his eyes closed, doing nothing. And this guy who wrote the book sitting next to him, and he gets getting more and more aggravated and annoyed and like, these kids are going crazy. Why isn't this dad like doing something? Why doesn't he like keep control of his kids or tell them to sit down? And getting more and more annoyed to the point that he actually like, excuse me, sir, your children are disturbing everyone. Could you please make them calm down? And this man opens his eyes and he looks at him and he says, oh, I'm sorry. We just came from the hospital where their mother just died. I don't know how to cope with this. And I think they don't know either. And immediately, of course, the author was catapulted from this annoyance at these kids being crazy to putting himself in this guy's shoes. Like, they just lost their mom. He just lost his wife. Who gives a shit if the kids are being loud in the subway car? You know, and it really hit me, this story. And if you can keep that in mind, and every time you encounter a difficult person or a difficult situation where you can't understand the other person, you know, you don't know where they came from. What are they going through? You know? And I think for anyone saying, oh, you did yoga in your pregnancy, that's why your baby died. Yeah, maybe there is a really deep rooted fear in maybe the inadequacy of their own body, or maybe they're unhealthy and they have a longing to be able to move the way you do, you know, but don't.
Yeah, you never know.
Injury or disease, like who knows? Yeah. So.
Yeah, and to be honest, like that would have been, like my story kind of exploded on social media in those first few months, and then a lot of people were sharing it. So I got a lot of like maybe people like just not in my tribe that was coming from, and it's not a lot either, like if those things stick with you, right? So
of course, I mean, there's more overwhelmingly there
gazillion
positive supportive
So not like, and then you know, the past few years, even 2 years, like I can't even remember the last time I've had to delete anything off my Instagram. It's actually really miraculous in a way, like 100% of everything is positive right now. Yeah.
How many followers do you have on Instagram?
108.
108?
I know.
108,000 people follow you.
Yeah.
And I'm fairly certain that 99.99999% of those people, they are all your tribe.
They're
your people.
And it's just, yeah.
They know why they follow you. They love you. They look up to you. And you're going to keep having that connection of community and of tribe and support. Mm-hmm. Which is, it's worth more than 108 million people following
100%.
You.
Yeah.
We don't really give a shit. So
you've
managed to really create something absolutely beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Through this pain.
It is. It is such a blessing. And when Lily was born, I mean, it also, like,
and how
it's
was
incredible.
That,
like,
how was that birth? Did you ever?
Yeah.
Because you got some answers about
We
what
did
happened.
Get answers. And I think that's so important, because not only has, like, I think emotionally have I helped people, but, like, Landon's story has saved babies' lives, like, a lot of babies' lives. Like, I still get messages today saying I was diagnosed.
So what happened?
Because of you. Because I was 37 weeks pregnant with Lily, and the exact same thing happened. I started getting itchy, and it was so subtle. It was just like a tickle on my calves underneath my skin at night at 37 weeks. But I knew that it's the exact same sensation that had then built and got worse with Landon in those last few weeks. And I had done crazy amount of research by this time. As you can imagine, after you lose a child, you go down every rabbit hole and you want to know what happened. And so on the forefront of my mind was ICP, which is intrahepatic cholestasis of pregnancy. And it is a liver disease, crazy.
Is it rare?
It is rare. Not as rare. I think 1% of pregnancies, and then in some regions of the world, 6%, like in Latin America, I believe. And, 1%, that's like 1 out of every 100. So, like, that's not...
Still, it's not that...
It's not that rare. And, like, I think when I went to the hospital with my daughter, there was, like, a woman beside me who had it. And I know lots, like, not lots, but, like, in the social media world, every time I post anything about it, I have, like, 20 comments that are like, oh, I had that too, and stuff like that. So
what does it mean?
Basically, it means that your liver doesn't process the bile acid the way... Hello, sweetie.
Hello, Luna.
She wants to talk to you.
Yeah,
so it doesn't process the bile acid in the blood properly. So it builds up, and that becomes toxic for baby. And it can cause stillbirth. That's the most common thing that it causes. Between 37 weeks onwards is where you're at a high risk. I think if untreated, there's like a 15% risk of stillbirth, something crazy.
Hello.
And so that was at the forefront of my mind, and I went...
And you told your doctor?
Yeah, I went straight into the hospital the next day and was like, I'm not leaving till this baby comes out, because I was 37 weeks and I knew the risks. And of course, it's like, they can't just do that.
They have can't to have just a reason. Say, okay,
they have a reason. Although, actually, because I had Landon and because he had died, I had a huge advantage because they did take me seriously. And so that would have been Wednesday, went to hospital on the Thursday, and I had a C-section by Saturday at noon. So it was pretty good. Like, they couldn't get in right then, but they were able to squeeze me in. And it's funny, because leading up to this, I was actually resistant still to having a C-section because I was so terrified of going through the same pain and being through that experience again and reliving that. I thought I was going to bring everything up again. And it was a very different experience with Lily because I knew I wanted her out. I didn't want to risk the induction and trying for a VBAC because it would have taken a lot longer and I didn't have the time. So I knew, like, in my heart, I couldn't do it. I couldn't sleep at night. I couldn't, because I thought she was going to stop moving. And then the night before the morning we were supposed to go in for the C-section, I thought she stopped moving and I couldn't feel her move, and so we raced to the hospital, and I was so sure that she had died. And she hadn't. She was just sleeping. But, those thoughts, it's hard, yeah. So, yeah, but this test for the liver disease is something that takes some time. So I wouldn't have gotten results. They did the test, but I actually didn't get results till 2 or 3 weeks after Lily was born.
Wow.
And so if I had waited...
They wouldn't know.
And so that's the thing. It's like... And ICP usually shows up a lot earlier. There's time to diagnose it, treat it, and the risk goes way down when you are being properly taken care of and you have like an early delivery. But because it was so late, there was like, I was already at that danger point, and I don't know why my symptoms showed up so late. Partly I think it might just be because... one of the ways you can kind of help your ICP is with a really healthy diet and exercise and things like that. So I think maybe because I like already had that and I drank tons of water and all these, maybe the symptoms were minimized. I don't know.
But how was the C-section with Lily?
It was really, I was awake for it. And I was just so ready. And so ready to have an actual, like a living child, like just to feel her, breathing, and to be know that she was safe. So once she, like, they pulled me out of her, they kind of pressed her up to my cheek, so I knew she was there. But then they had to whisk her away because she wasn't breathing properly, which wasn't dangerous. It was just that she was a little bit premature, so she had to be hooked up to the a CPAP machine, which helps her breathe and then clears her lungs. And then,
so she got to immediately know that she
okay. knew she was okay. And then Justin was with her, and then he would kind of relay back to me that everything was okay. And then I felt calm. And to be honest, like after losing Landon, like waiting, like I was okay. Like I was just like, I can wait. I know she's safe. I know she's alive. And I was able to just like take some breaths. And it was just, when she first came onto my chest, it was just like, I have a video of it on Instagram. And like, she looks at me with her eyes and they're just wide and open. And she just kind of stares right into me. And it's just the best thing ever. And she was so chill. Like I had this feeling like, oh, you know, like it's going to be traumatic for her to be like, go through a C-section. And she was just so, it's like she knew. She knew what was happening. She knew what was happening. She just rested on my chest and just, you know, started nursing like a pro and just, oh, she's so cute.
Do you still get signs from Landon?
Many. Like, well, lilies were a big sign. Lilies, I had lots of lilies in my garden and they were blooming. I predicted they would start blooming when he was born, and they were. And then that always kind of reminded me that, you know, he's not here physically, but there's some parts of him around and present. And lilies kind of kept coming back to me through all sorts of really crazy ways that I write about in my book. And wild lilies growing in random places, paintings of lilies on like these interesting gifts, bouquets of lilies from people that didn't even know me or at all anything about my story. All animal, like butterflies are another one.
I saw a video the other day of a butterfly that just sat on you for the longest.
Yeah, and at the first retreat, there was like, it was crazy. We go visit this really sacred site, the petroforms that have been there for like ever, as far as we know, or like since prehistoric time anyways, and the indigenous people in the area would have built them, and they're extremely sacred, and there's all these like really cool stuff that stories and things that happen there. And one of the things when all of us women visited was that all these butterflies flew in and they were surrounding us, and this man who's like the keeper of the petroforms, and he was there, or he arrived kind of serendipitously. We didn't know he'd be there, but he started talking to us about it. And he's like, he didn't know why we were there. He had no idea we were a group of women who had lost children. And he said, you know, the butterflies are said to be the souls of children who have passed too soon.
What?
I know. We all looked at him and we're just like, what? And then at this petroform site too, there was actually rocks laid out in the shape of a pregnant woman. And it's like really, really kind of intensely powerful space. And the story behind it is that it used to be a turtle. And this man who was the keeper, who stays at the petroforms all the time, was there telling us about this. He says, and about 20 years ago, he's telling this story about what happened. And he said, one day it was in the shape of this pregnant woman. And I was like, oh, those, you know, somebody came in and was messing around with the rocks, like, and this is extremely like taboo, so he's angry about it, and he put it back exactly how it should have been. And then the next day the same thing happened, and so he put it back, and then the third night he decided to stay overnight and camp out, and he heard this rattling and this like the rocks shaking and this light, and I can't even describe it in the way he describes it, but basically went to look, the flashlight, and saw that it had again transformed into the pregnant woman. And he asked spirit, like, why this had happened and what was going on, and like why are you messing with our petroforms? And because he realized this was something bigger, and he got this, he spoke with a woman who told him that that she had lot like and I spoke with women, I mean like in a vision or a dream that she had lost a child during childbirth, and that she wanted to this to honor all women who had been through this experience. And I was like, what? There's and we were all just kind of like standing there like listening to him talk about this, being like, what?
And he didn't know why you were there. Nothing is random.
And then so the fact that I had chose to host a retreat there is also like how bizarre. Like that I knew, I just kind of drove by one day and it just, I just knew it needed to be there. And I'd only been into the area a few times before because there was a hike near there that we did a few times while I was pregnant with Landon. And then we would pass this beautiful, like it just kind of stands out in the landscape because it's just, you know, there's this gorgeous lake and then this wood, it's like these peaked ceilings and these big windows, and it's just all like log cabin-esque style and just rustic but very like elegant looking, so it really stands out. And I was like, what a beautiful space for a yoga group retreat, because they have this great loft with all these big windows and stuff that overlooks the lake. And so that I chose it to be there was just really incredible.
So serendipitous.
Oh yeah. And then on the hike we did to the place where I went with Landon, there was a lily, an orange lily, just like Landon's, growing out of a rock, like literally in the middle like of this hike. No other flowers. It's just like in the Canadian Shield, which is just rock and moss, this beautiful orange lily.
Waiting
like,
for you.
How about that? Yeah. So was
it,
many
it was
things.
It was clear early on that that she would be called Lily.
Yes.
Of course.
Yeah. I could feel it from the beginning. And I actually intuitively predicted I was pregnant before I knew I was pregnant. And then I also felt that it was a girl. And I don't know, like, it could have been wrong, but it's, like, I was so sure. So she was Lily from the moment.
She was Lily from the start. And she's the happiest little girl.
Oh, my goodness. She is just
I'm so... just looking at you, the three of you. Yeah. I mean, it's the most beautiful thing. And it really is a beacon of hope, you know, for anybody going through any similar type of pain right now. I would really encourage to go look Amelia up.
And, thank you.
On Instagram. It really helps. Lily does, wasn't it one of her first serious words she learned was happy?
Yeah.
So you would post these videos and she just says, happy, 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 happy.
Be happy and me happy and happy, happy. And yeah,
she's the happiest just, little girl.
It's I don't know where she got that, but it's adorable.
I want to seal our podcast by reading something from your book. So this book came my way when I was pregnant. And I wasn't able to begin reading it until after Lea Luna was born. She's standing on my lap right now, making noise with her little favorite plush toy called Lily.
Isn't that
so perfect? Okay, so it's a letter that you wrote.
Okay.
It's May 7th, and it says, "Dear baby, it's already been one whole week since we found out you are here with us. I hope you are enjoying yourself in there. It makes me happy knowing that you get to share the space your brother lived most of his life in. Ever since your brother died, I've been wondering what it might be like to carry his little brother or sister. At first, I felt that I could never love another baby the way I loved your brother, and even the thought of having another baby to heal made me angry. I knew your brother could never be replaced, and that there was nothing in the world that could mend together the million pieces of my heart shattered into when I found out he wasn't going to come home with us. All I wanted initially was to be Landon's mom, so I decided I would continue to mother Landon, just in different ways. I wouldn't be able to nurse him, but I could donate my milk. I wouldn't be able to do yoga with him, but I could host a yoga retreat for moms who lost babies. I wouldn't be able to watch him grow up, but I could tell his story and see him have a bigger impact than he could have if he had lived 100 years. And I will keep on being his mother for as long as I live. But I also knew that once your brother got a bit older, a bit more independent, I would be ready to give him a little sister or brother. This still scared me, though, because what if something went wrong? Could I survive losing another baby? Even though Daddy and I were trying to make you for a while, I intuitively knew that you wouldn't arrive until my heart was ready. I needed to get to a place in my healing where I felt I was strong enough to handle anything and where I could love and trust myself again, and I think you knew that too. I know I'll still have my bad days, but I'm going to do everything I can to make sure Landon's legacy has only a positive impact in your life. I want you to be able to feel all of my joy and all my excitement. I want you to come into this world surrounded by love and not fear. I know I thought I could never love another baby as much as I did Landon, but I was wrong, so wrong. I've just grown another heart so I can love you both equally. Forever and ever. That last sentence. I've just grown another heart so I can love you both equally.
So it will stay with me
forever. Thank you so much for coming on the show and for...
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me and just for being this inspiration and a light for all of us. So it's been such a journey, but here we are, together again.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I love you.
Love you too.
Anyone who's listening, I know you have another retreat coming up in September with a few spots open. So if anyone feels called,
you can
join.
Visit landonslegacyretreat.com or just send me a message. I'm on Instagram, or
you can follow Amelia under Amelia
K Yoga.
She's neat. Amelia K Yoga. Thank you, love.
Thank you.
I am so grateful for this episode and the story that Amelia has shared with the world. Thinking back to every podcast episode so far, we have seen stories on yoga, on following your passion, on guilt, vulnerability, relationships with our bodies, our breath, and the world. But whatever we're speaking about each week, we always circle back to that courageous, infinite love that we all hold in our hearts. Once again, I'd like to thank my sponsors for supporting this very special episode. One of these sponsors is Nature Box. We all want to eat in a way that makes our bodies feel good. But when it comes to snacking, sometimes it feels like the whole world is delicious and has a billion calories versus boring and tasteless. It doesn't have to be that way. Healthy meets delicious with Nature Box. Nature Box has over 100 snacks that taste good and that are good for you. All snacks are made from high quality, simple ingredients, which means no artificial coloring, flavors, or sweeteners. So you can feel good about what you're eating. My favorites are the mocha almond bar and the white cheddar caramel popcorn. The mocha almond bar is the perfect afternoon pick-me-up, and the white cheddar caramel popcorn gives my riding a really delicious boost. You're sure to find your new snack obsession at Nature Box. They add new snacks every single month, inspired by real consumer feedback, the latest food trends, and professional chefs. It's super simple. Just go to naturebox.com, choose the snacks that you want, and Nature Box will deliver them right to your door. And there's no risk. If you try a snack and you don't like it, just don't eat it. Nature Box will replace it for free. Right now, you'll save even more. Nature Box is offering From the Heart listeners 3 free snacks with your first order when you go to naturebox.com/yogagirl. That's naturebox.com/yogagirl for 3 free snacks with your very first order. naturebox.com/yogagirl. Also, a huge thank you to Parachute for supporting this episode. Sleep is everything, not just for a growing baby, but for her mom and dad as well. Our little baby girl now has a bedding that's just as soft and cozy as our own, thanks to Parachute and their new beautiful line of baby bedding. There's nothing more precious than our sleeping daughter, and there's nothing softer than the bedding that she's on. At night, we share the same bed, and I can rest easy knowing during her daily naps, when she's in her own crib, her bedding is 100% natural and made completely without any harmful chemicals or synthetic softeners. Plus, it's beautiful. Creating positive impact with everything I do, and also with what I buy, is really important to me. Knowing that Parachute's products are designed in Venice Beach, California, and responsibly manufactured in Europe by fairly paid employees is a huge point for me. Parachute also donates thousands of life-saving bed nets to communities in critical need with the United Nations Foundation Nothing But Nets. Go check it out. Visit parachutehome.com/yogagirl for free shipping and returns. No need to worry about what happens to your return bedding. All returns are donated straight to Habitat for Humanity. Create a beautiful bedroom space for your entire family with Parachute and help others around the world sleep sweetly as well. Visit parachutehome.com/yogagirl for free shipping and returns. You have 60 days, or should I say 60 nights, to fall in love, or you can send it right back. No questions asked. Go to parachutehome.com/yogagirl today. thank you to my beautiful and inspiring guest, Amelia Barnes. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to listen and subscribe to other great episodes of From the Heart Conversations with Yoga Girl. You can find all of these on rachelbraithen.com, on Apple Podcasts, on Google Play, or anywhere you normally get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review while you're there. Huge thank you to the folks at Digital Media for their production work. And of course, thank you to my sponsors, especially for supporting this uninterrupted interview this week. TransferWise, Parachute, NatureBox, and ZipRecruiter. Please support them the way they support this podcast. I will see you next week.